RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 69 with guest Brian Randall, recorded live July 16th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell, and with me as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. Richard, how are you doing today?
I am well, sir. How are you?
Good. Happy birthday again.
Thanks.
Of course, when people are listening to this, of course, it's past your birthday.
It'll be a month later or so, but yeah, it was your birthday right when we were starting this show. You've had another one, too.
That's right.
We're all getting older.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And we're plotting for various conferences in the fall, so there'll be more Run As. Tech Ed Europe looks like it's going to come together. We'll be there in Barcelona again. So lots of chances to see us. And if there's any shows anybody out there we aren't doing for you, we're trying lots of ideas. I got a cool one today, but feel free to send us an email, info@runasradio.com. So let's roll right to our guest, Brian Randall, a senior consultant with MCW Technologies. For over 20 years, Brian has been building software solutions and educating his fellow developers. Brian spends his time teaching Microsoft technologies to developers, working with new and emerging technologies like Visual Studio Team System 2008, and consulting worldwide for Fortune 500 companies like Microsoft, state and local governments, and small businesses. Brian enjoys helping people get the most out of their software. He does this through training for Pluralsight and speaking at events such as VS Live, TechEd, and the PDC. In addition, Brian shares through the written word. Brian currently writes for the Team System column for RamSDN Magazine. He's the author and lead instructor of Pluralsight's Applied Team System and Applied Windows SharePoint Services courses. And you can reach Brian via his blog at mcwtech.com/cs/blog/BrianR. He's also a good buddy of mine.
How the hell are you, Richard?
I am well, sir. And I'm just thinking, how many continents have I been drunk with you on? I know that that's a good measure of relationships, but I think it's like four.
I think we're four. I don't rate as good as Steve Forte, but...
No, I'm at six with Steve Forte.
Who does?
The best part, at TechEd US, I said to some of my Strange Loop cohorts when I saw you, I says, if Stevie Forte shows up here, Brian Randall will pick him up and shake him around to say hello. And literally at that moment, Stevie Forte walked in and you delivered.
You know, it's just the love, brother. It's just the love we have for each other.
It's all about the love.
Let me extend my hearty happy birthday wishes also to you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you very much. And we're all just
another
getting...
year, more danger to have.
Oh, yes. I'm graying up well. So, you know, I've had you talk on .NET Rocks and in other places about virtualization, because you've certainly been living and breathing that. But we've talked about virtualization a lot on the show, but I think one particular angle that I know you're really knowledgeable on is the things that IT folks can do in virtualization for developers. I mean, we think on the IT world a lot about virtualization for our production systems and for test systems, but what do developers need out of virtualization?
Well, you know, fundamentally, regardless of platform, right, we don't even have to, you know, pick a platform. Just virtualization in general just opens the door for developers in so many ways. I mean, the obvious, you mentioned test, right? The ability to have your code run in different environments as opposed to thinking, well, it might work okay. You now can have all these multiple VMs that simulate your different production environments based upon operating system, typical configurations, as well as what's really critical that we run into is compatibility, right? Running with this particular version of Office, this particular version of your production system, you know, maybe this version of SAP, this particular SQL Server database, et cetera. And I think having the flexibility to have multiple environments that are relatively cheap compared to what it used to take us to have real hardware around is just phenomenal.
I remember my first encounter with VMware was being able to run DOS 6.1 and Windows 3.1.1 virtual environments for backward compatibility testing.
Yeah, it's true that just the range of operating systems we have to consider, particularly, you know, it's nice to be able to run the latest, greatest operating system. I mean, you know, people like us, this is what we do for a living. We're always running the current stuff, plus, you know, whenever we get a beta, we're running that also. But, you know, real production systems, real environments, and lots of companies, they can't move as fast as Microsoft or any other software vendor does. So to be able to stay on a consistent platform and have that available when you need it, particularly when the hardware tends to age, to be able to run that old environment on modern hardware is just, I think, phenomenal, both for, you know, the IT pro as well as developers.
And isn't another area where development teams can potentially benefit is where typically they might have to wait on IT to build something or to configure something or to turn it up or turn it down. The old story where it's like, well, we need to have a new build server brought up to do build automation, for example, or a test automation server, where they had to do those as one-off things. Being able to repurpose and make things just more agile also makes it cheaper, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, but once again, regardless of vendor you choose, there's tools out there that let you set up self-service portals so a developer can go and say, you know what, I need an extra build server or I need a test environment server and submit a request through a web interface or a rich client interface. And depending upon your infrastructure, within minutes, you can have that machine spun up. They can use it. And when they're done, it's not this piece of hardware that someone had to requisition, allocate, deliver, plug in, put a, you know, a tag on. It's something that gets used and gets returned to the ether, so to speak, when it's not being used. And you just get such better hardware utilization, as well as you mentioned, the developers are getting stuff delivered in a responsive time frame. So they don't feel like they have to fight IT. It's now more like a team, you know, environment where you're working together.
Can we actually get to a point where we can safely and securely allow devs to provision themselves for resources like that?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
If you look at Microsoft System Center, which is what I'm more familiar with, right, it has a self-service web portal where you can specify templates for types of machines and, you know, based with, you know, sysprep images. And you can specify restrictions as to who can allocate, how much RAM. And with, you know, System Center's features, it will look at resource allocations so it can find the best host to run the VM on. You know, this is just, it's getting better every release.
Interesting. My concern would be that devs will love to spin up VMs and will never turn them off. And as an IT guy, I'm afraid to throw anything away, because what if there's a custom version of the app there that we need?
Well, part of that, this is where we start getting into communication. You know, there needs to be a distinction between VMs that are spun up for test and short life cycles, and that those have an automatic reclamation process where it says, look, if you're not actively using it, we see utilization go down for more than 4 hours. It gets reclaimed. Tough.
Right.
On the other hand, you can request a ticket that says, I want this VM available for a week. Versus, you might do a lot of your core development within a VM, and that's not touched by IT. That's managed and runs in your local workstation. So I think it's making a distinction between the types of VMs, right? And you got to watch out for VM sprawl. That's why you've got to have tools like System Center or VMware, I'm sure, I forget what their product is called, but they have a product to help you manage and keep track of all the VMs, make sure you're up on your licenses, but as well as you mentioned, make sure that you just don't have this thing sitting out there eating resources.
How big is the licensing issue in a development space like this? Doesn't MSDN Universal essentially cover us if we've got one for every one of our devs?
Yeah, effectively, so first disclaimer, I'm not a lawyer. I am not qualified to give legal advice.
And I would point out that I don't know that there's anybody in the world that's actually qualified to talk about licensing.
Yeah, including the lawyers.
But the way I understand it, to be clear, is yes, if you have an MSDN license, that gives you effectively 10 virtual, that would give you 10 licenses to test operating systems in. And that's exactly what those licenses are for. Making a distinction between your production licenses, where if you want to run, you know, your Exchange and SQL Server, other environments within VMs, you know, Microsoft's got some very interesting licensing, which a lot of people tend to not appropriately pay attention to, because virtualization makes it so easy to spin up a machine, is that you have to understand the licensing requirements to the point that if you host and buy licenses with, you know, Data Center Edition or with Enterprise Edition, you get a lot of, I don't want to say free, but you get effectively a number of licenses included with that host purchase. And this applies to whether you use Microsoft Virtualization or a competitor's product.
Sure.
So, for example, if you buy Data Center Edition of 2008, the way I understand it is you can run unlimited number of VMs on there. That takes care of your operating system licenses. That doesn't take care of your CALs. It doesn't take care of your usage rights for any of the software that runs in the VM, but it eliminates the need to have the additional Windows licenses.
On the MSDN Universal side, or whatever they're calling it now, I think it's also...
Well, if you want the official name, it's Visual Studio, right. Pick Your Edition with an MSDN Premium subscription.
There you go.
Man. Well,
they changed it a couple years ago. But I think it's important to point out that the difference in licensing, a fundamental difference in licensing on those MSDN licenses for development and test, is that you're licensing an individual to be able to use multiple copies of each product as opposed to licensing an installation of a product for people to use.
Oh, absolutely. That's definitely a key distinction. In fact, one of the big changes they made in MSDN Premium, the current replacement for MSDN Universal, was they actually changed the license to say that you could use the copy of Office that came with MSDN for Office-type work. The problem is people didn't realize the OULA beforehand, you could only use the Office software that came with MSDN if you're writing add-ons for Office.
Interesting. Right.
So they actually modified it to support that.
Which is probably modifying it to support the primary use case.
Exactly.
But you brought this up earlier, this whole, I can see where an IT operation has several different standard configurations, like an XP with Office 2003 and a Vista with 2007 and so forth. And so I'd want to keep templates of those configurations that then test can spin up to make sure a new version regresses between all the different configurations that are appropriate for the enterprise. It's interesting to me to think about, where does the licensing for that live? Is the template represent a license, or is it just a spin-up?
Well, technically, the template's just, so in the case of System Center, to speak to that product, right, the template defines the configuration, right?
Right.
The template is then associated with a VHD. The VHD then, the way you would set, there's two ways to set up. One is you set up the VHD to be sys-prepped, so when it loads up, a dev can enter their key.
Right.
Okay. On the other hand, you have the idea, well, if it's a temporary VM, you could always use a trial edition license.
You got 90 days. It's not going to be around that long anyway.
Exactly. I think, well, it's 60 days today with Windows Server 2008, plus if you use SLMGR, you can get a few more days out of it. But yes, depending upon the OS you're using, right, they have different time dates that you can use. But the point is, that's where trial versions are sometimes just as useful versus one of your real costs, particularly don't activate, right? There's no need to activate the image if you're going to dump it within a day.
Right.
I think once again, Microsoft is going to be trying to get you to do things if you're doing the right thing, which is my developers are using these licenses to test, and we don't ever use those for production. So we don't mix, for example, our library of test and dev images with our production images. Because you could go one step further and have your portal spin up a new developer's workstation environment, right, where it literally installs Visual Studio, installs all their dev tools, and that's an environment that's going to live beyond the 60 days or whatever the timeout is for the OS. So I think that's what the management issue you have to really consider, is that you be very clear and concise about what templates map to what VHDs, which in turn have been prepped with a particular version of the operating system.
And the nice thing is, this is really an encouragement to sys-prep those kinds of configurations, so you're not actually consuming a license until you use it.
Exactly. And once again, making the distinction, because a lot of, an organization that's going to have lots of, once you start getting about 25, 30 desktops, you start getting to the environment where you might want to consider running your own KMS server. And when you get about 5 servers, you can run a KMS server.
Right.
For activation, you start thinking, well, if we're going to do that, we want to make a distinction between systems that get activated and count against our licenses with Microsoft versus things that are one-offs, non-domain VMs versus domain VMs, right? There's all those things to consider. And that's where having a tool like System Center is just really mandatory beyond a couple of VMs, because you want to track licensing, you want to track usage, and you want to make sure you're spending the right amount of money. You don't want to buy too many licenses,
right,
but you don't want to buy not enough.
Well, I think, the reason we spent some time on this is that when it's just IT folks and they're in the management and space, they're managing this whole space themselves, they're pretty careful about how they use licenses. But when we've basically given developers the ability to spin up their own VMs, you've got to be able to give some of that responsibility for licensing over to them as well.
And a lot of the time, that's where that MSDN license really comes in handy.
Well, and I think that's critical that you make the distinction in developers. Developers tend to ignore licensing, right?
Right.
They hopefully have someone else taking care of them. And I think it needs to be made clear what they have available to them. And that's where the self-service portal needs to have some intelligence back to some kind of, meter that says, okay,
right,
you know, Brian's allocated, has five VMs available based upon his license, you know, whatever it is. Because as you're right, you know, the licenses are assigned per person. They're not assigned to a group or a pool.
Right.
And I think Microsoft.com/licensing is a place that I've ended up pointing people to a lot in the past. And they do actually have a toll-free number, which is 800-426-9400. And I have no idea how many times I've written that down, but I've called it a number of times. If you have licensing questions, that's really the place to go.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, you don't want to take our advice. You always want to, you know, get your environment spec'd out, know what you're doing, and then sit down with a Microsoft person and get it in writing and say, okay, this is what we're supposed to have. That way you've done your due diligence and you've covered everybody.
You always want to check yourself, because in the end, it'll be your butt. So
check
for yourself. They have licensing specialists in all their offices, and that's all they do is answer questions and help out with licensing questions.
Different model of virtualization for developers, and I'm running into this more and more, which is I have remote developers, and I want to keep control of the IP, so the dev environment lives in my data center, and they're RDPing to it using terminal services.
Yep.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. I want you to grab onto that, because I think this is fascinating.
Well, so fundamentally, number one, if you're going to do that, the biggest thing is provide the right hardware. I think the biggest mistake people make is they look to virtualization for developers, and they don't give the developers the right hardware infrastructure.
And this is really about the amount of horsepower?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, particularly start thinking about large scale, right? We need big boxes, right? Lots of cores, like Hyper-V supports 16 cores. You want the ability to make sure that people have enough RAM in the VM. So that means we're talking minimum 2 gigs for a developer, more if they're going to be doing development for a BizTalk, SQL Server, and the SharePoint, right? All those things often require installing the tools locally and the server locally. I know you do that with BizTalk and SharePoint. And then you got to make sure that they have the right I/O segment. One of the big problems is people say, okay, well, we have this big RAID array, but it's an older array. Maybe it's RAID 5, and you know, maybe the disks are only, you know, 5,400 RPM. You know, you bought some bigger disks because they were cheaper. And you're basically making your developers suffer, and that's going to cause a revolt. On the other hand, you get a nice SAN setup. You know, you've got dedicated LUNs per VM or whatever. You know, whatever you can do, and you start giving them the right amount of RAM, and you give them a good performing technology like, you know, Hyper-V. Well, then you're going to have developers that won't care, because they'll like the fact that they don't have to worry about all the management of the local resources. They just know they pick up their VM. It's got the availability on demand. They can get to it anywhere they can get an RDP connection.
I mean, it's also a snap to back up. I mean, all those virtualization advantages.
Yeah, it really is a good mix. As long as IT provides the right hardware, the developers aren't going to really care if they can get their job done.
Well, it sounds to me like we're really only talking maybe 4 to 6 devs per box when you're talking about, you know, your typical 4U, you know, Dell 6650 class machine, 16 gigs of RAM. I don't know that I would want to go more than 4, 5, 6 developers on that box.
No, absolutely not. You know, especially if they're, like I said, it's definitely relative to what they're developing. I mean, a guy who's writing, you know, class libraries that do, you know, tax calculations, you're going to be able to shove a lot more, you know, VMs in there, especially if you're running, you know, XP versus Vista and you're not doing anything fancy like WPF. You know, you have to understand what your developers are doing. You know, I had a customer I was working with, BizTalk. Well, they were smart. Their VMs all ran with 3 gigs of RAM because they were running BizTalk locally, and they had them partitioned. They all had fast disk I/O, and they loved it because they could get to it from other developers' workstations. They could, you know, RDP in. We did work in the conference room, and everybody just RDP'd into their workstation. It was great.
And very powerful stuff. I also think that now we really get that ability to give them a separate web server so they can practice the proper upgrades to things, and a separate database so they can experiment with that as well.
Well, you can, you know, it's very easy when you have the VMs under management control. You can easily, you can pause them, you can back them up. I mean, you can shut them down in a heartbeat if you find that there's some kind of weird worm going on in your system. Whereas when you have a bunch of physical machines that you have to deal with, and the fact that developers can do physical harm on purpose or accidentally to the machine, you know, when IT is responsible for making sure developers are productive, it helps if they can have a little more control while still giving developers this freedom inside their environment to do what they need, to have control, to run a web server. You know, that's really, you know, a good compromise between the two.
It's an interesting balance. What about the infrastructure for devs, things like Team System and their source control and so forth? Are all those things best virtualized, or should they be on bare metal? Does it make a difference?
You know, so fundamentally these days, there's very few things that can't be virtualized.
Oh.
But it always comes back to two things. Number one, is the vendor who makes the software going to support you? What's their support statement? Okay? And, you know, vendors will play loose and fast with this when they try and get you to buy their stuff, but ultimately the vendor who makes the software is the only one who can tell you they'll support it 100%. That said, you know, VSTS, Microsoft supports it in a virtualized environment, both Hyper-V, virtual server, as well as they'll support it in VMware. Now, granted, they get a weird thing that they can't dupe. They might ask you to duplicate it physical, but that's the standard response that you'll hear on anything.
Yeah.
When you look at what you virtualize, it comes back to hardware. You know, VSTS, for example, lives on top of SQL Server, Richard. So you know, you and I both know any application that's going to have high I.O., well, put it in a VM where you normally partition it across a physical RAID array, well, you got to do the same thing, right? You can't expect it's going to magically perform well. It's going to perform worse.
Right. No question.
The biggest problem I've seen is people virtualize and don't give the VM enough resources. I see people trying to take advantage of VMware's memory sharing feature, which is great from an IT perspective, but if you don't have a good guesswork on the load that's going to be present for those VMs, you could really hurt your team and really slow things down. So if you're going to virtualize, you got to make sure, once again, fast disk, lots of RAM, and you'll do fine.
I wonder if we're struggling to instrument our virtual environments well, just in terms of getting a sense of this VM is struggling for resources. It's low on memory or it's low on processor and so forth.
And don't some of the newer virtualization platforms help us to do that and sort of automate some of that?
Yeah, all the platforms do that. Like, you know, Virtual Server, Hyper-V they expose both performance counters that are available through the standard system monitoring tools as well as the System Center, whatever it's called now, it used to be MOM. They have management packs that will let you monitor and set thresholds. So all the stuff's there, but you got to know to use it. I mean, the problem is virtualization sometimes is so easy, we just jump into it.
Right.
And we don't apply all the same logic that we did against physical hardware and physical systems.
Right.
Right? It just becomes so easy to play with things. You got to apply the standard rules and then go one extra step and say, where does virtualization change things? Well, number one, you're going to have a box that you're going to be hitting probably closer to 90 to 95% utilization because you're going to say, well, how many VMs can I get on here based upon RAM and available
sure.
disk space? Whereas before it was, I'm setting up a box to run SQL Server. And so you tuned based upon SQL Server, not based upon virtualization plus the workload inside it.
Right.
And as far as disk storage is concerned, I don't know if you have personal preferences here, but it seems to me that virtualization was made for iSCSI.
You know, I don't have, mostly because the wife wants me to keep the house a house and not a data center. I'm right now just using, I have a hardware RAID arrays where I'm not using iSCSI or any SAN technology.
Right.
I do know from talking to people, Chris Kinson's a good idea. You know, they use lots of iSCSI and SANs in his environment. It definitely large arrays are where it's at. And the big thing is, you know, make sure you're being smart about disk space versus performance. You know, both major technologies out there, you know, VMware and Microsoft's technology support dynamic hard drives, which means they only allocate the space they need until they need it. Well, that's like, you know, doing, say your database to auto grow, Richard, right? I mean, that's not going to be your best performance option.
Yeah, there are consequences to that.
Exactly. So when it comes to our virtualization and hard drives, we want them, you know, we want to do fixed drives versus dynamic drives. Dynamic drives are good for testing and playing around where you want to just throw things away, but for production systems, you got to go with fixed disk. And then you want to make sure, based upon your RAID technology and your overall server technology, whether it's, you know, network-based through iSCSI, a SAN, versus, you know, a local array, how you're segmenting the individual underlying drives to the individual virtual drives. Because, you know, virtualization technology lets you create more than one virtual hard drive for an environment, which means you can partition them across multiple runs, multiple physical hard drives.
I do see that people are running into issues with load testing as well using virtualized environments. I mean, obviously you want your load test environment to match your production environment to some degree, but we get into this virtualization cascade and start doing load tests. I don't know if you've seen this where really the results get distorted because they're running in a virtualized space.
Well, I think it's, you know, depending on what you're trying to measure, right? Are you measuring the host? Are you measuring the VMs inside the host? Is going to be a big issue of how your results get skewed, but absolutely. In fact, you know, Hyper-V, because of some of the things they do in the low-level VM bus, you can see what a, you know, basically better perf inside the VM than you would directly across the hard drive because of the way they do caching and other things.
Right.
So it's understanding those distinctions and understanding. And the only way right now, you can't just look to any website. You got to use, you know, any advice, whether I write an article or you read something from Microsoft or VMware. You have to take that as basic guidance, but you got to set up and test it and use your brain in your own environment because every environment is going to be subtly different based upon the hardware you buy and how you configure things. And so you're going to have to load test and understand what the numbers look like in your virtualized environment and then maybe do some comparison testing with some real machines and do some rough, you know, okay, if we have three virtual machines and do the test versus three real machines, what's our SKU level based upon amount of RAM, disk, et cetera?
And actually, you know, figuring out those results and pulling them back in such a way to know that this is where the issues lie. I just think we really don't sit on a great set of best practices yet in terms of utilizing virtualization this way.
No, because I think when we start with some of the very basic mechanics, right? How much disk space, how much RAM do I have, how many cores do I have? I mean, that's where we're starting. It's then going back to, you know, what's an IO-intensive application versus a processor-intensive application? You know, will having multiple virtualized processors help or hurt the actual application performance in a VM? And I don't think we today have all the knowledge out there. At least it's not shared knowledge, that's for sure. It's not known knowledge. You know, I'm sure everybody in their environments has a certain amount of knowledge of how things work in their environment. We don't have the ability to say, here's the common best practices like we do with SQL Server, right? We have some very hard and fast rules we know with SQL Server how to get the best performance out of it.
All right, one more topic as we're running down on time, and that is the utilization of virtualization in QA. I haven't done this yet, but have you seen folks actually being able to use finding a bug, snapshotting the state of the machine at that point so they can basically hand that bug to the dev as is?
I haven't seen people doing that. What I've seen people do is they'll actually just leave the VM running and they'll tell the dev that it's available and have
it
via RDP. Definitely doing that. You know, you have the recording feature available in many of the test products, so people will just take recordings. That's a very popular thing because a lot of those things can be attached to your bugs in your system. In fact, the new version of Team System has an integrated recorder feature for that kind of stuff. And you could obviously take that one step further with interactive recording of the VM session. But obviously having the ability to have the snapshots available and just say, okay, save the snapshot, it has the bug, that's a really powerful feature, particularly if you use Hyper-V or some of the VMware products that support the snapshotting where you can even have multiple paths through the snapshots where you go two different directions and try different scenarios.
Sure.
I'm not seeing people doing that yet. I think part of it, once again, comes back to the thing that started this conversation was infrastructure and management.
Right.
How do you manage all these VMs? And then, once again, how are you going to manage all those snapshots?
Yeah, that could definitely cascade out of control. You'd end up with a lot of VMs that way. But on the other hand, the ability to fight back from cannot reproduce as a bug resolution is pretty powerful for me.
I've seen it. I've done it before. Had a customer once and actually did a P2V of a buggy environment, and actually, because we tried to troubleshoot it, you know, remotely, ended up taking a virtual machine of the environment and were able to find a resolution based on that. So a little bit of a different than just saving a snapshot, but still leveraging virtualization to be able to take an eyeball look at a machine.
Well, I think that's a great example, particularly when if you don't have any hardware issues, where the issue is all in software and configuration.
Right.
To be able to take that environment and create a virtualized environment that you can test and really bang on without having to worry about the real system is really huge.
Yeah, there's a huge potential there. I think we don't have enough infrastructure for the test environment to make that easy yet, but I think it could be a very compelling area. This feels like an area of future development for virtualization for devs.
Well, we're definitely seeing, you know, obviously Microsoft keeps building more tools like System Center. They're working on the new version of System Center 2008, which will support not only their existing virtual server environments, but it's going to support ESX server, you know, from VMware as well as Hyper-V from one console.
Mm.
You can see them, and I know VMware has an entire product dedicated to the test lab. In fact, I think it's called Test Lab, but VMware, don't, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. They have a product for that. So, I mean, we're starting to see the maturation. I think the big thing is that virtualization is gaining such a large mind share. We're really going to see huge investments in virtualization across the enterprise, and development and tests are going to get a lot of attention.
Awesome potential. And Brian, thanks again for coming on the show to sort of give us some insight into what's going on over here. Things
you know,
we can do.
Thanks for having me. You know, I have no lack of fun talking about this stuff. I think it's great.
Well, and it's your excuse for buying all that heavyweight hardware for the house.
Hey, I've got stuff to do, man. I'm working here. I'm providing guidance for the industry.
Oh, this sounds like a pitch to the wife all the way.
Yeah, I'll make sure I play back this recording. Make sure you edit out this little part.
Any final thoughts, Brian?
No, just go forth and prosper, and just remember, a virtual machine requires all the love and care that a real machine does. You got to patch it, has to run antivirus, and you got to watch those licenses, regardless of vendor, make sure everybody gets their due, because we want these vendors to be around so we can build great solutions.
You bet. Brian Randall, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.